Good morning, brothers and sisters, and I greet you this morning in the name of our Lord and Savior, Mediator Jesus Christ. And as Jack mentioned in his prayer, and I don't know if it was just coincidental, but perhaps it was, we are living in tumultuous times. I think it's momentous times. My whole life has been living in, I feel like, and I express regret to my grandsons, and they don't see anything to be sorry for. But they can't imagine what it's like to see your first airplane when you're probably 7 or 8 years old. That thing's flying up there in the air just like a bird when it's not flopping its wings, and it's staying up there. I made a comment one time to my grandfather. I said, Grandpa, I said, you came up with your father up out of Ohio in a horse and buggy. And I said, just last week, you flew out to San Diego to see your son. And you're back. And I said, and now you see on the TV where they have landed on the moon and they have brought rocks back from the moon. Well, son, he says, maybe they landed out there in Nevada somewhere and we just thought it was the moon. And so there's that, what would I call it, a little bit of doubt, room for wonder. Grandpa was never convinced that they got to the moon. He's seen it on TV, and he was aware of a lot of the comments that were made. But my grandpa never believed that they made it to the moon. So whatever that's worth, don't make any difference. But we are indeed living in a momentous time. And just this past week, our president, after the elections, decided to take a little trip over to Asia, Far East. And while he was at this meeting, and I don't remember who he was talking to, but he was talking to a representative from one of the Far Eastern nations. Now, whether it was Iraq or Afghanistan or Pakistan or what, I don't know. But he made the statement, quote, the United States is not and never will be at war with Islam, end quote. Well, at first, that was troubling for me, just that he would say that. But at the same time, or almost the same time, just a matter of a minute and a half or 2 minutes across the bottom of the TV screen, flickered this little news message that Muslims are the fastest growing faith group in the UK, end quote. Now, I think UK stands for United Kingdom. But whether, and I don't suppose that includes us, but maybe we're a part of it, I don't know. But I do know that they are one of the fastest growing faith groups in the United States also. I think our situation in this nation is critical, if it's not already catastrophic. While our president was at the G20 summit conference, he made a statement to the effect that he was already aware of the creation of 1 million jobs in the United States. What he said, at home. And the comment made the newsman that was on the program say that he was sure that President Obama would be asked where those jobs were when he got back. So he didn't. He might have convinced the people that he was addressing, but he didn't. It didn't convince the newsman that was covering the story. And no, my sermon is not about politics or political situations. But you can't talk about what we're talking about without it involving top politics. I'd like you to turn to page 469 in your Book of Alma and read what the situation was in Moroni's time, the 21st chapter, the 38th verse on page 469. We're going to start with verse 38. Yea, we see that Amalickiah, because he was a man of cunning devices and a man of many flattering words, that he led away the heart of many people to do wickedly, yea, and to seek to destroy the church of God and to destroy the foundation of liberty, which God had granted unto them, or which blessing God had sent upon the face of the land for the righteous's sake. I'd like to pause here and point out to you that liberty...
Excuse me, what page?
We're on page 469. Page 469. That's Alma, the 21st chapter, and we started with the 38th verse. I would like to point out that liberty is not a right. It's not a natural sequence. It's not a natural consequence. It was not found or experienced in the whole European continent as we experience it in this Western Hemisphere. It was a gift from God. And as it says in that 39th verse, the foundation of liberty which God had granted, or which blessing God had sent upon the face of the land. Now, in Moroni's day, it was approximately 72 years before the coming of Christ. And the man's name that was seeking to destroy the foundation of liberty was Amalickiah. But today, that man goes by the Muslim name of Obama. When he stands before a group of foreign government representatives of governments that have publicly stated that it is their goal to kill as many Americans as they can, and they're going to kill the Americans because they represent, and in some cases it's reported they say they are, the devil and his people. So we, America, represent evil to the Muslim world and the Muslim nations. And the Muslims represent good to those same Muslim nations. And when he stands to publicly declare to the world that it is America's national policy to not be at war with those who have already taken the lives of hundreds of innocent civilian citizens, and whose goal is to destroy and or undermine our way of government, then he is, in my understanding, endeavoring to undermine the foundation of liberty. Do any of you remember the news comments that were made by President Bush right after 9/11? When he went before the nation after they had determined that the skies were safe for him to return to Washington, he had a news conference. And in that news conference, he made the declaration to the citizens of the United States that we, the United States, our government, was from that time on at war with terrorists. He also made a statement to the other nations of the world: you are either with us or you are against us. You will help us fight it, or you will be an enemy of the United States. And now today, our present president says that we are not and never will be at war with Islam. I'm maybe being a little bit dramatic, over-dramatic here, but the way things are going, I fear that maybe our days of seeking liberty, the pursuit of liberty and happiness, may be numbered. And we may not know the freedom to stand up here and talk as I am talking today in the near future without being subject to some penal action. such as Abinadi experienced there at, in his lifetime, at the end of his lifetime. It's like we were saying in our Sunday school, you're not going to get up and join some movement. You're not going to get up and motivate and go out and join the masses that are demonstrating. And probably a good idea not to, because many times they are instigated put to action by people and forces movements that are not in line with God or the scriptures or the government or man or the nation, but rather by some man. But I think that the time is going to come when it will come to us. We will not have to go to it. And hopefully, if I have the privilege of speaking again sometime, I'm going to try to address the way to defend ourselves from this. We can't avoid it. I think the time is coming when we won't be able to avoid it, but we will have, as we have mentioned several times already, the assurance of a loving God that is aware of his people, their plight, and whether or not they are dependent upon him for his kindness and his goodness. But I'd like to get on. Our dilemma is not a shortage of military personnel willing to defend and protect our liberty and our freedom, but rather our dilemma is a commander-in-chief willing to hamstring the military branches so as not to be able to preserve and protect. He seems to forget that he, like all presidents before him, took an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States, and in so doing, to protect the citizens of these United States, especially within our borders, but not just within our borders, anywhere in the world. In my opinion, that statement that he made alone about not ever going to be at war with Islam is reasonable grounds for impeachment and removal from office. But that's not the theme of my sermon, and that's not my reason for saying these things. I'll leave those kinds of actions or those kinds of thoughts to the lawyers and to the politicians that are watching, some with intrepidation, very closely what is going on. My concern is much the same as Moroni's was 72 years before the coming of Christ. We're talking about the same land, the same hemisphere, the same countries. And we're talking about the same responsibility of the citizens of this land. Now, Moroni's dilemma was he had to force the populace to take up arms to defend their land, their liberty, their families. And our dilemma is the commander-in-chief not willing to fulfill his oath of office. I'd like to refer again to the 21st chapter of Alma on page 469 in your Book of Mormon and read verses 41, 42, and 43 and make another comment. Speaking about Moroni. It came to pass that he rent his coat, and he took a piece thereof, and he wrote upon it, quote, in memory of our God, our religion, and freedom, and our peace, our wives, and our children. And he fastened it upon the end of a pole thereof. And he fastened on it his head plate, his breastplate, and his shields, and he girded on his armor about his loins, and he picked up the pole He was dressing for the army, for battle, for war. He wasn't messing around. He wasn't kidding. He wasn't just, as the saying goes, bumping his gums. He was serious. And what he did next was very impressive and very far-reaching. Let's see. Where did I stop? Okay. He fastened on his head plate, his breastplate, his shields, and he girded on his armor and about his loins, and he took the pole, which was had on the end thereof his rent coat, and he called it his rent coat. He called it the title of liberty. And in this full military attire, he borrowed himself to the earth, and he prayed mightily unto his God for the blessings of liberty to rest upon his brethren, so long as there should be, get this now, a band of Christians remaining to possess the land. He was praying for his people at his time, but he was praying for us. His prayer was for the land and for any Christians who possess that land, as long as there was Christians there to possess it. Because he was aware, he was mindful, maybe there's a better way to say it. Their liberty as they had known it was not a gift, it was not a right, it was a gift, it was not a right, it was not a consequence of any descendants of his forefathers. It came from God. So he bowed himself to the earth, and he prayed mightily unto his God for the blessings of liberty to rest upon his brethren so long as there should be a band of Christians remain to possess the land. Verse 44. For thus were all the truth believers of Christ who belonged to the church of God called, by those who did not belong to the church, and those who did belong to the church were faithful. Yea, all those who were the true believers of Christ took upon them gladly the name of Christ, or Christians, as they were called, because they believed in belief in Christ who should come. And therefore at this time Moroni prayed that the cause of the Christians and the freedom of the land might be favored. And now we'll skip down to verse 70, I think it's on page 473, maybe it's 472 in your book. verse 70. And it came to pass that whosoever of the Amalekites that would not enter into a covenant to support the cause of freedom, that they might maintain a free government, he caused to be put to death. And there was but few who denied the covenant of freedom. There were some that denied it, that would not renounce what they were doing, and they were not willing to take upon themselves the name of Christians and to preserve or protect the right of freedom. And it came to pass also that he caused the title of liberty to be hoisted upon every tower which was in all the land which was possessed by the Nephites. And thus Moroni planted the standard of liberty among the Nephites. I would like to include this morning a few comments from a paper that I received from the Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, concerning some of the actions taken by our present presidents. And these comments are not related to any church or any religion or any religious group. The speech was delivered on the campus of Hillsdale College on September 20th, 2010. This was long before the elections. This was long before the, what do they call that, sweep of the Democratic Party or the political upheaval that took place. It was given by a U.S. representative. His name is Mike Pence. He's from the state of Indiana. He is a representative of the 6th Congressional District. So these comments were uttered long before the national elections and the recent trip to Iraq by President Obama. Quote, I took several excerpts out of this, and then there's a little bit of this that I'd like to include. And if you want to read the whole story I've got here, you're welcome to it if you want to read it. So make up your own opinions about what it says, what it's doing. But in his speech, he made several comments about the presidency and the Constitution. And one of the quotes he said is, "The presidency must adhere to its definition as expressed in the Constitution." In other words, the president must act within the confines and the rules set down by the Constitution. Another thought: the powers of the presidency are extraordinary and necessarily great, and they are. The president of these United States has more influence and more power and more impact than any of the kings that ever reigned in Europe. He influences more lives, more governments, and more people. He goes on with this thought, or this story. He said, "There is no finer or more moving or more profound understanding of the nature of the presidency and the command of humility placed upon it than that expressed by President Coolidge," Calvin Silent Cal. He, Mr. Coolidge, like Lincoln, lost a child while he was president, a son, 16 years old. Mr. Coolidge wrote, "The day I became president, my son had just started to work in a tobacco field. When one of his fellow laborers said to him, 'If my father was president, I would not work in a tobacco field,' young Cal replied, 'If my father were your father, you would.'" President Coolidge's admiration for his son was apparent and expressed the relationship that this Mike Pence is trying to talk about. A president is not all power. He has tremendous power, but he has tremendous humiliation and tremendous self-restraint. During his father's administration, M. Calvin contracted blood poisoning from an incident on the south lawn of the White House. President Coolidge wrote, "What might have happened to him under other circumstances, we do not know. But if I had not been president," and he doesn't finish that thought, but he continues on. And then he continued, "In his suffering, his son, he asked me to make him well. I could not. And when he went, the power and the glory of the presidency went with him." And we can perhaps relate to the same feeling of loss, of sense of hopelessness that maybe President Lincoln felt also. But Lincoln had a few accomplishments to help him to realize, to be aware that his cause was just, his action was what was needed, and he was rewarded for his steadfastness and his tenacity. A sensibility such as this, and not power, this is Mike Pence speaking now, "A sensibility such as this, and not power, is the source of presidential dignity and must be restored." Now, this was in September that he said this to a group of college classes that were preparing for midterm break. "It depends entirely upon character, self-discipline, and an understanding of the fundamental principles that underlie not only the Republic, but life itself." This modern presidency has drifted far from the great strength and illumination of its source, the Constitution, as given life by the Declaration of Independence, the greatest political document ever written. I heard someone else make some comment about that this morning, that these were not men of any particular religious group or order. These were men who all had their own selfish concerns over how to be governed. And yet, they seemed to recognize the need for the power and the influence that this document would have. Well, I think that what Moroni wrote is just as important, or just as, it's not as consequential in what it accomplished, but it's just as important to mankind as what the Declaration of Independence took all those pages to write. Moroni did it with a few words, but he hit the course, and he hit the core of all of the things that the Declaration of Independence stands for, and that this Code of Liberty, what did he call it? Anyway, the Standard of Liberty that he raised up on all the towers of the land. Again, the 41st verse of Alma 21. And it came to pass that he rent his coat, and he took a piece thereof, and he wrote upon it. This is what he wrote. In memory of our God, our religion, and freedom, and our peace, our wives, and our children. And he fastened it upon the end of a pole thereof, and he caused it to be displayed from all the towers throughout the land of the Nephites. The people didn't rally behind him. He had to go forth amongst the populace and cause them to either declare allegiance to this declaration or opposition to it. Knowing full well when they said they were opposed to it, that they were going to be put to death. A very extreme measure. But when it was finished, when he had accomplished what he set out to do, when Moroni was done with what he was doing, he had accomplished what had been done in the Old Testament over and over. God destroyed all those people that were in opposition to him. Sometimes he destroyed whole cities, whole families, children, men, women, whatever. The difference being with Moroni, they were given a choice. And I'm pretty sure, in my own estimation of human nature, that given the choice that they were given, if they would choose death rather than to capitulation, if you want to call it that, to this thing called freedom or liberty, if it meant that much to them, that had they not been put to death, they surely would have rose up against all the people or any of the people that did pledge their allegiance to this cause. And I'll give you this much also. Moroni was a righteous man. I don't know that this Mike Pence is not. I don't know that our president is not. I just know that many of the things that he has done and many of the things he did up until this 20th of September last year was not just disappointing or unsettling to me. It was also unsettling to a lot of other people. I'll just say this much about this college. They are dedicated to the teaching. It's an arts college. It's not a science college. They're dedicated to the teaching of the young people of this nation government as it was instituted and as it was defined by the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States. And they're always seeking students who have these goals in mind. So primarily, I've never been to any of their meetings. I can't speak from experience, but speaking from what I have read, I think they are a very much politically oriented organization, a group of people. However, their politics are based on government and not parties. They're not all one party or the other. They are independent type of thinkers. Now, whether or not Monroe's Declaration measures up to the Declaration of Independence or not, it readily and candidly defines his concern for freedom and for liberty. I believe that his prayer was uttered for himself and his people who seen the things the way he did at that time, not knowing that he was praying for a group of people centuries in the future. But he worded in such a way that it includes us as followers of Christ who are willingly, gladly to take upon ourselves the name of Christ, to strive to keep his commandments, and who are concerned for the physical well-being of our nation as well as the spiritual well-being of its citizens. That prayer, of course, was uttered there in that 21st chapter. It was started with verse 43. I got that back here somewhere. I got it back here somewhere. Yeah, here it is. In the prayer that he bought himself mightily, he bought himself to the earth, and he prayed mightily unto his God for the blessings of liberty to rest upon his brethren so long as there should be a band of Christians remain to possess the land. And because he worded it that way, I believe he was praying for you and for me. There were a few more things I was going to say, but in listening to what Jack said in his prayer, I thought maybe it'd be better if I didn't. I don't want to turn the pulpit. I don't think the pulpit is meant to be used as a influence in telling people how to conduct their lives or how to vote. It's to be used to tell people what's going to happen to them if they conduct their lives in the right way or the wrong way, proper or improper way. Our reason for being, I think, is to inspire people to do right. It's not to inspire people to riot. It's not to inspire people to argue or harangue one another. But as we can discuss the things that are important in our lives in our Sunday school and express strong emotional feelings without being intimidated by or overpowered by those of our brethren who disagree with us, if we are mindful of the Holy Spirit, we can do so no matter what we're discussing. Do I want you to go out and make a big scene? No, I really don't. I have not said anything as strongly at any of the coffee shops or coffee breaks that I've attended as what I said here this morning. And what I said here was not meant to incite to anger or animosity anybody. I didn't mean to. I don't mean to judge or criticize anybody for whatever their way of voting and whatever their reason for voting. And if I thought it was important to tell you how I voted, I would tell you. But it's still a personal thing, as it is for all of us. But I appreciated very much the things that I heard from the pulpit, from others besides myself. I appreciate very much the concern that Brother Jack Martin expressed just prior to the elections when he said the words that he said. I'll not try to quote them because I didn't mark them down. But he expressed concern for the first time in his life for the choices that we had to make at the polls that year. And I thought that's a remarkable statement, because always in the past it has been principle more than righteousness. And this time, perhaps we weren't as aware of how important it was until after the fact. I hope I'm overplaying a situation. I wish I believed that I were, but I don't. My advice to you would be, when you see these things happening, seek God's influence as to what is the right thing to, right way to react, the right thing to think, the right thing to do. I was not nearly as impressed with the things that we were discussing about this Mr. Glenn Beck, this news commentator, who I had been informed or led to believe anyway was a Mormon. But he said himself in his own newscast Thursday or Friday, he's a Catholic, and none of this is based on anything about his religion. It's based on his concern for his country. And I think he was a little less than candid when he told us what his concern was. But anyway, I expected, because I had thought that he was a Mormon, I expected he was going to get something of some of the Latter-day message out, but it did not come. And I guess it wasn't intended to be. I'm not going to say anymore. Thank you very much. Yes, I'll answer any questions you have.
You said that you wasn't trying to make your sermon political. Well, the scriptures tells us that the watchmen,
right,
and the watchmen, I believe, are speaking of the ministry.
I think you're right.
The watchmen are set upon the tower to watch out for the welfare of his people. And I think what you're saying to me is you're not being political, but you're warning us against the government that is turning ungodly. That's not political. That is what the people of the world needs to hear. I wish that you're, I'm not trying to say you're a great man, but you've done a pretty good job. I wish the people of the world could hear the things that you're saying and be warned and read what it says in the Book of Mormon about what you're saying. Because I think we're there. I think that we need to be warned, and I think our ministry needs to warn us of where we are and what's going on. And it's not good. It's not God. So you're not being political. You're being one of the watchmen there.
That's the way I hoped it would come across. And I'm if it didn't, I failed somehow or other. Because no, I'm not ganging up on our president, and I'm not sticking up for him, either one. What I'm saying is that what he has put the people, the populace of this nation, at risk to an awful lot of evil influences in the world. And we're not dealing with people who are as kindly, considerate of their enemy as the people of these United States have been in the past and seem to be even yet today, in spite of what happened at 9/11. There is, I think, a little stronger feeling of forgiveness in the world as far as building this Muslim mosque is concerned than what I thought there would be. I thought there would be more opposition to it than what there is. But the part of the problem is that we have had this freedom and this liberty and this protection of God for so long that we think it's always going to be there. And we don't realize that it can be destroyed. It can be taken away from us. Just like Moroni realized that if Amalekai was not faced with this, what he was doing was going to undermine the liberty of these peoples. And that's what's happening in our country today, I think.
If Jack will permit me, if you will permit me, ask one more thing.
I have no problem.
Back to our Sunday school. I think I might have found the settling of that question in my mind. We read in verse 21, "And now when the flames begin to scorch him, he cried unto them, saying, Behold, even as ye have done unto me, so shall it come to pass, that thy seed shall cause that many shall suffer the pains that I do suffer, even the pains of death by fire, and this because they believe in the salvation of the Lord their God." And there's a reference that I went and looked up there. I didn't find it. It was there over in verse 96 of that same chapter. And I want to back up a little past 96. And it says, "And it came to pass," this is later in the same time span, "And it came to pass that Gideon," which we all know that Gideon was a righteous man, "sent men into the wilderness secretly to search for the king," and that would be King Noah, mm-hmm. "and those that were with him. And it came to pass that they met the people in the wilderness, all save the king and his priests. And they had sworn in their heart that they would return to the land of Nephi, and if their and if their wives and their children were slain, and also those that had tarried with them, that they would seek revenge and also perish with them. And the king commanded them that they should not return, and they were angry with the king and caused that he should suffer even unto death by fire." See, that was to me, that's the fulfilling of the prophecy that Abinadi gave.
So what Abinadi was saying, what you've done to me is going to happen to you.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
I'll share that.
Anyone else that you want to say? Thank you. I appreciate it very much. And Jack, I would appreciate any comments you might have. You have any?